I'm Gail Harrison for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. For as long as there have been humans, there have been disputes and the need for someone to resolve those disputes. As every sixth grader learns, the new form of government envisioned by America's founding fathers included a way of resolving disputes through checks and balances, with the legislative branch making laws and the judicial branch interpreting them. But these days, some on the religious right and in Congress see the judiciary not as an equal partner, but an obstacle. The Terry Schiavo case, removing the words "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance, taking the Ten Commandments out of an Alabama courthouse and removing its Chief Justice from the bench, a Massachusetts court ruling to allow single-sex marriage, all grounds for serious dissatisfaction on the right with decisions coming from the courts, and a determination to do something about it. So listeners, what do you think about congressional calls for the impeachment of judges that Capitol Hill doesn't agree with? Should Congress stay above the fray? Do you see an independent judiciary under assault or an overdue need for judges to become more responsive to public opinion? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And with me in our Boston studio is Federal Judge Nancy Gertner of the U.S. District Court of Massachusetts. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Judge Gertner. I'll get back to you in just a moment. I also want to welcome joining us on the line from Nacogdoches, Texas, Dr. Richard Scarborough, founder and president of Vision America. Welcome to you, Dr. Scarborough.
Well, it's good to be on the line with you. And, Judge, I want to very quickly say I wish you well.
Well, thank you. You too.
Judge, let me start with you. I'm interested in hearing more about this conference that you attended last week in Washington. The title of it was Confronting the Judicial War on Faith. And I wonder why you see this as a war and why you felt there was a need for a conference like this.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Gail, for the last 30 to 40 years, some activist judges have taken the vantage point. This has been written on widely and is being advanced as a doctrine of jurisprudence, that the Constitution is a living document. It is, quote, what the judges say it is. And what's happening right now in terms of the outcome is, while it takes two-thirds of both houses and three-fourths of the states to amend the Constitution of the United States of America, we have more and more cases where one or two judges, because of their philosophy, are literally rewriting laws and changing the Constitution or the effect of it. And so what we have is literally a war being waged on people of faith, and we want to confront that.
What would you like Congress to do about this?
Well, I'd like them to exercise Article 3 of the Constitution, which provides them the oversight. Our founding fathers, recognizing the sin nature of man and the fact that any man who attains too much power, or any branch of government that attains too much power, becomes a danger to the citizenry, provided that no one branch of government would be able to tyrannically overrule the other two. That philosophy has worked quite well in this country for better than 225 years, but we are living in an age now where judges, at least some of them, are behaving as if they think that they are an oligarchy. We're being ruled by an elite few to the detriment, we believe, of our country.
Judge, there's a telecast, as you know, scheduled for April 24th that portrays Democrats as being against people of faith. And I wonder, are you concerned about how these issues are dividing Americans instead of trying to work together to find some common ground here when you single out a political party as being basically against religion?
You said judge. Did you mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I meant Dr. Scarborough. Uh-huh. Forgive me.
Well, I was scrolling through some notes. I wasn't listening as carefully as I should have. So repeat your question.
The question is about the divisiveness of Americans on this kind of issue. When you say that one political party is against religion, the Democrats in this case are being...
Yeah, but I want to qualify that. I've never said that. I wouldn't say that. Some wonderful people of faith are on both sides of the aisle.
Well, there's a telecast scheduled for April 24th that portrays Democrats as being against people of faith for blocking some of President Bush's judicial nominees. And I'm just wondering how you feel about this as dividing people rather than trying to bring them together. I mean, isn't that bringing people together part of your mission?
Gail, it is, but it's today in today's world, if you try to have a reasoned debate on anything, you're accused of dividing. There seems to be a tenor of thought being advocated by some that there should be no discussion, no debate. If the judges say it, that's good, and that's the final word. The fact is, some of these judicial appointees to the federal appeals courts that are being stonewalled and unconstitutionally filibustered, some of these are ardent professors and possessors of faith, and there does appear to be an assault on anyone who holds strong values. I think we could probably clearly say that John F. Kennedy would be stonewalled by some on the Democratic side of the coin because he was a committed Catholic. And it appears to some of us that if you hold values that are rooted in any kind of biblical worldview, that you might as well not even be put yourself up as an appointee because you're going to have a serious trial getting appointed.
Judge Gertner, let me turn to you. Do you feel the American judicial system is under attack?
Well, I didn't until I heard your other visitor, your other guest, rather. I think in terms of this debate, this is a debate that really bears no relationship to the reality of the courts as I know them. The question of activist judges deciding whatever they want. Nothing that I do is not subject to review by the Court of Appeals and then by the Supreme Court. And insofar as I decide something that's a matter of legislation, Congress can always overrule that. Insofar as I decide something that's constitutional, that's a different and more complicated matter. But that rarely happens. Most of what I do has to do with statutes and people and not the Constitution. The judiciary is long known as the most moderate branch. We choose judges in direct proportion to their not being activists. So I don't know what this your caller is concerned about.
Do you see this as Dr. Scarborough, why don't you respond to that?
Well, I'd say let's look at actions of judges in the last 40 years. State after state, when the people were given a choice regarding abortion, rejected abortion on demand. It was the courts that mandated abortion on demand. Our children were allowed to pray in schools, and no one seemed to object to that until one atheist raised a question, and judges decided there was a clause in the Constitution which they had to extract a private correspondence and a clause from it where Thomas Jefferson addressed the wall of separation to a group of Baptists in the Danbury, Connecticut Association, and suddenly we couldn't pray, and our kids couldn't pray in schools. They couldn't read their Bibles in schools. The Ten Commandments could not be posted in schools. Each one of these steps of what I believe is an assault upon people of faith came at the hands of judges, and that's what I mean. All I want to have is a debate. Judge, I'm not your enemy, but I do think that there is a place for rational debate among rational people on some of these issues, but we are right now seeing time and time again, the most recent is same-sex unions and homosexual marriage mandated by literally a one-judge majority in the state of Massachusetts, and it launched a nationwide discussion and controversy.
But you see, the Massachusetts case is very interesting. That's an interpretation of the state constitution, the highest court in Massachusetts. And now there's a debate about whether the state constitution should be amended. That's exactly what checks and balances are all about. The courts say X. If people disagree, there's an effort to amend the constitution. If that effort fails, as it has here, then the system has worked. You're also pointing out perhaps a handful of opinions with which you disagree. And the worst thing is to have the federal judiciary responsive to any political point of view or any religious point of view. There may be others who believe that these opinions are perfectly coincident with the Constitution. The whole idea here is that's what the courts have decided, and if there's a interest in amending the Constitution, then that's the way to proceed, not to attack the branch, which is what the implications of what you're saying are. It's a direct assault on the branch, and that will have pernicious effects beyond this case or that case. When we travel around the world, when the State Department sends judges around the world, what we tout is the independence of the judiciary. That's the single most important export of the United States. And if the legislature begins impeaching judges because of opinions with which they disagree, you will crush the architecture of the Constitution.
Dr. Scarborough?
Well, I just respectfully disagree. It seems the judge is advocating letting the process work, amend the Constitution when necessary, and yet appealing to our listeners that would be a very bad idea. All we're asking for is what the judge has said was the proper approach. We're calling for the Congress to step in and review the actions of judges. In the recent Terry Schiavo case, Congress voted, passed a law, signed into law by the President of the United States, requesting that the judge in Florida look at new evidence. Instead, the judge opted, and the appellate court judges opted, to look at process. Never did one judge go and interview conduct any kind of personal interview with the woman herself, and they didn't look at any new evidence that might have surfaced in the last 10 years medically, and condemned this woman to die. This was a viable human being who responded to her family, who closed her eyes when people prayed, opened them when they didn't, and sobbed the last time they saw her.
Dr. Scarborough, I have to ask you to hold the thought there, if you will. We have to take a break. There's much more to be said clearly about all of this. We're talking this hour with Federal Judge Nancy Gertner and with Dr. Richard Scarborough. Listeners, what do you think about congressional calls for the impeachment of judges that Capitol Hill doesn't agree with? Should Congress stay above it all, or do you see an independent judiciary under assault? Or perhaps an overdue need for judges to become more responsive to public opinion? We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harrison for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection. I'm Gail Harrison for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. With the president's judicial nominations on the way, we're talking about a growing crusade in Congress to, in the words of House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, rein in federal judges. We're speaking with Judge Nancy Gertner from the U.S. District Court in the District of Massachusetts, and also to Dr. Richard Scarborough, who is the founder of Vision for America. Nancy, I want to give you a chance to respond to some of what Dr. Scarborough was talking about as we took the break, particularly with the Schiavo case and how that has played out.
Well, I can never speak to the comment about the outcome of a case, but let me just say this. If Congress can impeach judges because they disagree with what they do, we will be undermining the independence of the judiciary. You know, when I speak around the world, you go to former communist countries where it was not unknown for the party leader to call up the judge and say, you're going to decide it this way, or if the judge decides it one way, lose his housing or lose his job. This is exactly what we're not supposed to do. And the Schiavo case is actually very interesting because polls suggested that 80% of the public, I mean, you're talking about public support, 80% of the public, I believe, was actually in support of the outcome. So I'm not saying that the judge should have reflected that 80% either. All that I'm saying is the public opinion is one thing, but judges are to be interpreting the law, and there is sometimes a disconnect and sometimes not. In the Schiavo case, there was a coincidence with the public opinion, although not with some of the leadership in Washington. In any event, you can't have a system of an independent judiciary where it is a one-to-one correlation between what the public wants and what the politicians want and what the judges do. The judiciary was intended to be protecting against majority, oppression as well as government overreaching. And in this case, that's what they tried to do. You know, there are flawed decisions, but that doesn't mean you undermine the institution. That's a whole separate question.
Well, and I assume that's one of the reasons why federal judgeships come with a lifetime guarantee. You know, this is a lifetime job.
Yes, and that we take great care in the selection of it. And there are all sorts of checks and balances within the institution. As I said, I'm reviewed, I'm appealed, there are disciplinary proceedings, there are all sorts of checks and balances within the four corners of the institution. For Congress to step in and go across that chasm, you know, it really will undermine, it seems to me, some basic fundamental principles in the Constitution.
Well, and does it also cut both ways? In other words, judges appointed by Democratic presidents aren't necessarily liberal. Judges appointed by Republican presidents aren't necessarily conservative when they get on the bench.
You know, I can say this quite personally. There is an enormous change that you feel the first time you get on the bench and you put on the robe and you swear to uphold the Constitution. It is palpable, and we have all felt it. Everyone has to move to neutral from wherever they were. And since the public is not neutral, there's always a disconnect. That always happens.
We want to go to Brian now, who's on the line from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Hi. How's it going?
Very well, thanks. What did you want to contribute to the discussion?
Well, I think, you know, what I see is a serious attack by the religious right to undermine the independence of the court. We've seen the religious right gaining a lot of power in recent years, and I think they've gone about as far as they can with the legislature, so now they're trying to attack the judiciary. You know, we need to have that independent judiciary. They can't be influenced by Congress or anybody else. If they do this, then our freedoms are in serious jeopardy.
And Dr. Scarborough, I wonder what your response would be to Brian's point.
Well, my response to Brian is that the judiciary as a whole is not under assault. An independent judiciary, which we all hold as a sacred trust and right of our Constitution and a unique aspect of our freedom, does not mean that the judiciary is unaccountable. There are times throughout history when judges begin to overreach, and the only way you stop that is through the constitutional process, and that's what we advocate.
And Brian, do you see this as something in which reasonable people can disagree, or is this something that concerns you?
Oh, it concerns me greatly. I think reasonable people can disagree, but if you don't like the decisions that the judges are making based on the Constitution, then you have the option of trying to get a constitutional amendment and change what they're basing their opinions on. But, you know, if you can't get that through, well, then obviously the country doesn't want that. And, you know, because that's what the judges base their opinions on, the Constitution.
Well, Brian, do you do when judges who sit on the court look at the same Constitution 13 years apart and come to exact opposite decisions? Justice Sandra Day O'Connor in 1986 said sodomy laws were constitutional in this country. In 2003, she looked at the same Constitution and decided they were not constitutional. It is clear that judges make mistakes and that judges often make decisions based upon their own changing philosophies.
So that what you do is that you bring additional cases. You challenge it. You do it through argument and rational interpretation to persuade the judges of the error of their ways. You do not do it through what really is a bludgeon, which is the impeachment power. And in fact, the sodomy case is a classic example. Some people thought the initial decision was wrong and kept on bringing the cases and saying, look at this, look at this, look at this. And through a deliberative process, it was changed. If you wish to have it changed again, then you continue that deliberative process. You don't bring in, I want to say nuclear war, but that has a different connotation now today. But you don't bring in this blunderbuss. It seems to me that's exactly what you don't do. Because as many times as the decision changed in a way you didn't like, it has changed in a direction that you would like. And the worst thing is to do, as I said, is to do something because of a particular debate that undermines the architecture of the system.
Brian, I want to thank you for the call. And also, Dr. Scarborough, maybe you'd like a quick response, and then I know you need to go.
Well, there are some cases like the sodomy decision that unleash a world of harm to civil society. The same with the abortion decision. Some of these decisions that have come from rights that have been created. Judges reading into the Constitution that which was never intended to be there. Franklin Roosevelt addressed that in 1937, and we're facing that today. And that's why the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration exists. StopActivistJudges.org is our website. Thank you.
Dr. Scarborough, thank you so much for joining us from Nacogdoches, Texas. He is founder of Vision for America. I want to bring Kay Daly into the conversation now. She's president of the Coalition for a Fair Judiciary and has been described by her admirers as the new Phyllis Schlafly. Kay, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
And tell me what you would like to see Congress do.
Well, there's several things. I think the first and most important is to get back to the 220-year Senate tradition of a fair and simple up-or-down vote for all judges. The legislative filibuster will stay just as it has been for just as long, but the judicial nominations should not be stopped by a 60-vote majority. That was never intended in the Constitution. I think that's the first and foremost. That's priority one on the list of things to do.
So number one, make sure that judicial nominees can get through the process more easily?
Sure. Well, not even more easily, but just as the Constitution has intended it to be.
Nancy, I want to get back to something, another piece of this puzzle in terms of judges and politics, because just to refresh our memories, there are actually two elements of this, it would seem to me, that might be making the judiciary uneasy. One is the question of physical violence. We've, of course, seen a couple of horrific experiences of that in the last couple of months. The other one is the intimidation from politicians. But just to refresh our memories, the two most recent attacks on a judge and judge's family didn't have anything to do with politics.
Right.
So when you hear someone like Senator John Cornyn of Texas stand up and suggest that courthouse violence might be explained by the distress that people feel about judges who are making political decisions but are unaccountable to the public, as he put it, what's your reaction?
I think that's an extraordinarily damaging and dangerous thing to say. I don't think that there's any link between the violence and judicial decision-making, certainly not in those instances. And if anything, fair-minded people have to say, you know, what's wonderful about our judicial system is that we fight in the courts. That's exactly part of it. There were religious wars in Europe, and we set up a system in which all of these terribly troubling debates would take place in the calm of a courtroom, and that's all that we're talking about here. So I think that that's a terribly dangerous thing to say. Let me just say one more thing about being unaccountable. You know, it's true I have life tenure. It's true that I am appealed. You know, I have to be reviewed by courts of appeals, etc. But by the same token, I read the newspapers. I live in a community. I feel whenever I am criticized, I care about it. I try to make certain that what I do is legitimate to the people around me. I do so by writing decisions. I'm not, you know, on Mount Everest talking to myself. We understand that this is a branch that has to make legitimate decisions, and the public has to understand. So it's accountable, but it's not one-to-one accountable in the way that, you know, you can vote me out of office. But I tremendously care that the public understand what I do and find it to be appropriate.
Kay Daly, did that comment from the senator make you squirm a little bit, or do you take his point?
I don't squirm very easily. Let me tell you that right up front. The fact of the matter is that Article 3, in fact, does create a system of accountability through we the people, through our representatives in Congress. And when the judiciary is out of control and emanates within those penumbras and finds those things that simply are not there, then they must answer to we the people. Once they put on a black robe, it doesn't necessarily mean that all of a sudden they have been imbued with special unaccountable rights. That cannot be challenged. And sure, there is the appeals process. Sure, there's all kinds of things like that. But we've also seen that even the appeals courts are out of control. We've seen international law and even polling quoted in Supreme Court law. I mean, this has just gone so far that now, you know, in the recent Terry Schiavo case, we've seen a non-terminal woman murdered. By a probate judge and a sheriff in thumbing their nose at Congress.
I want to go to Durham, North Carolina now. Dave is on the line. Hi, Dave. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. Listen, you know, I am very much in agreement that I think our judiciary should be independent. And I know that you can't impeach a judge for their rulings, no matter how much you disagree with them. Now, I've been giving this some real serious thought. And I'm thinking of becoming a Muslim and having my kids become Muslims. Now, I want to be able, if the religious right in this country wants the Bible and the Ten Commandments in the schools and the courthouses of our country, I want to see the Koran and the tenets of the Koran on the schoolhouse wall and in the courts. Now, does the religious right have any problem with this? Or if I decide that myself and my kids should become Buddhists, that our texts from the Buddhist religion and our tenets from the Buddhist religion should be mounted on the schoolhouse wall and the books in the schools and the courts.
Dave, thanks for the call. Let's put that question to Kay Daly. Where do you draw the line here?
Well, the fact of the matter is that, you know, most of the argument that I've heard on this side seems to think that those of us on the so-called religious right want to make sure that there's nothing but Christianity. That's not the case. What has happened, though, is, as far as I can see, the last group on earth that can be discriminated against are Christians. That we're not allowed to pray in public. We're not allowed to express our views on Ten Commandments. We're not allowed to say God. They're trying to take it out of the Pledge of Allegiance. This is throughout our founding documents, our references to God. And, you know, if your family wants to become Muslim, great. That's wonderful. But it doesn't mean that they necessarily should exclude Christianity either, which is exactly what is happening.
Judge Gertner, I missed the class on constitutional law, but refresh my memory, because I don't think that the Constitution explicitly says God or Christianity or the Bible, does it?
The Constitution doesn't. I mean, certainly the Declaration of Independence talked about inalienable rights of the Creator. Yes, but there's at least for 200 years was the view that there should be a separation between, on the one hand, what people do in civil society in which they are free to practice their religion, and what goes on within the walls of the government. And what's interesting about this debate is that it's really about a handful of decisions. It is not about the thousands of decisions that are made by the courts. It's about a handful of decisions. What's troubling to me is that rather than address the merits of those decisions, which have been part of our debate for a long time, you're talking about, you know, going after the decision makers. And as I've said before, that's a very important distinction, because that's a distinction that could affect generations to come.
But what about this notion that the separation of church and state isn't in the Constitution either, that it actually came from a letter by Thomas Jefferson? So is it still an important doctrine, regardless of where it came from?
The Constitution, it spoke in general terms, and people have been giving meaning to it. And one part of that meaning for 200 years, beginning with Thomas Jefferson, is the notion that civil society is one thing and the government is another. It's not just the free exercise clause, you have a right to practice your religion, but also that the state should not put its imprimatur on a particular religion or another. That's subject to interpretation. Scholars debate about it. Let there be a continuing debate about that. Let there be a debate from one end of this country to the other, but don't impeach judges with whom you disagree. That's the critical issue.
Okay, Daly, what about that separation of church and state? Are you suggesting that it's time to lower that wall and mix it up a little more?
Well, the wall was actually erected to protect religion, not to protect the state. And it isn't supposed to be a freedom from religion or an absence of religion. It is supposed to protect all religion and religious freedom in this country. And what is happening instead is a targeting of Christianity. This is happening all over the place. It's no longer Easter break, it's spring break. It's no longer, you know, a Christmas break at schools, it's a winter holiday. I mean, the examples are just rife throughout this jurisprudence. And the problem is not that Muslims can't practice their religion or Buddhists can't practice their religion, but that Christians in particular seem to be targeted these days. And heaven help you if you have a Bible in your hand at a football game. I mean, it's remarkable what is happening, and that the freedom to express your devotion to your God, whatever your God is being challenged in every sense of the word.
We need to take a break here, and then there is much more to be said on this topic, clearly. We're speaking this hour with Federal Judge Nancy Gertner from the U.S. District Court, District of Massachusetts, and to Kay Daly, President of the Coalition for a Fair Judiciary, which coordinates strategy supporting President Bush's federal judicial nominees. Listeners, do you think the American judicial system is really under attack, or is this mostly politics talking? Do we have a red state, blue state judicial divide in the country? And was the Terri Schiavo case just the tipping point for an antipathy against the judiciary that has been brewing for some time? We invite you to join the conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harrison for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Gail Harrison for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. And we're speaking this hour with the Honorable Nancy Gertner, federal judge from the District of Massachusetts, and to Kay Daly, president of the Coalition for a Fair Judiciary. And we ask you, is it time for reform in the judicial branch? Should judges be pushed by Congress to be more responsive to public opinion? And whose public opinion is this? Are you concerned that the conservative religious agenda might be pushing against the judicial branch of government? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I want to go to Rod now, who's on the line from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Rod, welcome. And what would you like to add to this?
Well, I was just going to ask Judge Gertner if she didn't think, well, first of all, does she think that, I guess over the last 30 or 40 years, that the court system, particularly the Supreme Court of the United States, has gotten a little more activist? And if that is indeed the case, you know, has that not, in fact, I guess, provoked some response from people who may think that, you know, it's a form of tyranny for the Supreme Court to speak on certain issues? I mean, I'm a lawyer, and I understand the need for the judiciary to be independent. It distresses me that people are pushing some of the ideas that I've heard on the show. But I think to some extent the courts need to bear the responsibility for the fact that maybe they've opined in areas that the Constitution is at best murky on, and maybe provoke some of this response.
Rod, thanks for the call.
Well, and first, the problem is trying to understand what the word activist means, and I'm not just parsing words here. If the measure of activism is how often a piece of legislation is overturned, then the court under Justice Rehnquist has in fact overturned more pieces of legislation than in all of the previous years, all pieces of congressional legislation. So if that's the measure, then it's activist in that regard. But no one is talking about many of those decisions with respect to the importance of federalism, states' rights, et cetera. If you're talking about issues with respect to individual liberties, and that seems to be what this is at core about. We talk about Roe v. Wade. The thing is that it's a good part of our society. We fight out moral battles in our courtrooms. We are a litigious society. So when an abortion issue is brought before a judge, the judge has no choice but to resolve it. One side or the other loses, and one side or the other wins. It's interesting that in this debate, and part of that issue is Brown versus Board of Education. No one is challenging that. And yet, surely in 1954, there were those who thought that that was a piece of judicial activism. What I'm saying is that individual liberties are fought out in the court. Issues of principle are fought out in the court. Judges have to take positions on the cases in front of them. The Constitution has a Bill of Rights. If you disagree, then there can be subsequent appeals, subsequent efforts to change the court's mind. With respect to Roe v. Wade, the underlying decision has been cut back in so many ways. There's no Medicaid funding of abortion. There's all sorts of informed consent requirements. So that subsequent litigation really changed the nature of the initial right, and I predict additional litigation in the future. But that's part of a deliberative process. So I don't think that the courts are any more activist than the citizens who bring cases before them.
Kay Daly, I want to put the same question to you as to whether you see this as a much more activist court. And also, was the Terri Schiavo case just the tipping point for something that has been building for a long time?
Well, I think that the Terri Schiavo case certainly has captured the hearts and minds of the grassroots, because it has this relevance, this impact on people. A lot of folks have people in their lives, in their families, who are going through this tragedy. But this started a long time ago. You know, the Pledge of Allegiance case, the Ten Commandments case, that was part of it too. But this started even before that. Roe v. Wade. I mean, what I just heard the federal judge say was that she's looking towards the next set of cases that are going to challenge things like informed consent, et cetera, et cetera. Are we then going to challenge, you know, the parental consent laws out there? Basically, let's look at this. It takes an act of Congress for a child to take a Tylenol at school, and yet they can go have an abortion, a major medical procedure, without their parents knowing it. This kind of thing is what makes ordinary people scratch their heads and say, wait a minute, something's not making sense here. And it's activism, you know, that is imposed by judges who I don't think are finding the answers in the Constitution. I don't see anything in the Constitution whatsoever about abortion, and I certainly don't see anything in the Constitution whatsoever about homosexual sodomy. But it seems to be that there are rights to all kinds of things that maybe there's some invisible ink that I don't have the decoder ring for.
But you see, that is just the point. You're talking about the decisions with which you disagree. And you don't, for example, put Brown versus Board of Education in that. And the problem is that an attack on the judiciary will wipe out the Brown versus Boards of Education as well as the Roe v. Wades. And so that's why this is an inappropriate way of proceeding. This is the wrong way to go. It is the independent judiciary that brought about the Brown versus Board of Education as well. And the focus ought to be on the underlying merits debate, not on attacking the institution.
But even good people can disagree on how Brown v. Board of Education was decided. I mean, there's a whole group of legal scholars who seem to disagree on exactly how that came about. Not necessarily the result, but how that came about. There are people who disagree on Bush v. Gore, who are sitting on the bench today, who disagree about Bush v. Gore and believe that was judicial activism. You know, the problem, though, is that the accountability does, in fact, lie, according to Article 3, with Congress. I mean, Congress created your court.
Accountability
can take it away.
The accountability lies with Congress, and there's no question, lies in some respect with Congress. And Congress has to respect the constitutional architecture. Congress tomorrow could shut off electricity to my court and could, take away our appropriation. But Congress respects and has respected, because it's a co-equal branch, that the institution has to function equally, and we need the tools to do so. So just to say that Congress pays for the pens and pencils and the electricity is not enough. There is an underlying constitutional architecture. I mean, what's troubling here is that rather than debating the merits of particular cases with which people disagree, you caricature the judge and you caricature the institution, and that makes that's both dangerous to the Constitution and dangerous to the debate. If you disagree with particular cases, by all means, the scholarship should reflect that. People should talk about it. And what we know is that you can bring another case, and who knows where the interpretation will go. But what you don't do is undermine the institution.
To Thurman now. He's joining us from Malden, Massachusetts. Hello, Thurman, and
yes,
welcome.
Good morning, everyone. John Adams, in his wisdom, in writing the Massachusetts Constitution, put in a procedure called Article 8, which allows the legislature, with the concurrence of the governor, to remove a judge simply by a vote, not an impeachment process. There is because of the Margaret Marshall and her inappropriate mandating of a major change in public policy and her assault on representative government, wherein the people make laws through their legislatures, activate a group called the Article 8 Alliance, which is trying to remove her on that basis.
Can you just refresh our memories for people who are not from Massachusetts, Thurman, as to if they don't know who Margaret Marshall is,
all right,
the case you're referring to?
Supreme Judicial Court head chief. And she and three colleagues in crime mandated gay marriage in Massachusetts, which created a major change in public policy going around the legislature. In fact, she ordered the legislature to pass a law. You don't do that in a republic. If we're still a representative republic, major changes in public policy are set by the legislatures elected by the people, and they're responsible to the people. So there is a mechanism called Article 8 in our Massachusetts
exactly
Constitution,
right,
which allows avoids an elaborate extended impeachment hearing to remove a judge, and there is a movement to get rid of her. I was wondering if Kay Daly perhaps might concur that perhaps the amendment to the federal constitution allowing a vote of Congress and consent of the president to remove a federal judge, including Supreme Court, might actually be useful to restore representative government.
Thurman, thanks for the call. Kay?
I still believe that some of the best government is local government, and that the state constitutions should do most of the review, because it seems as though in the particular case in Massachusetts, you're talking about a state judge there. The federal judiciary is what it is. I mean, in a lot of ways, you don't know what you're going to get when you put them on the court. If you look simply by Republican versus Democrat presidents who've put folks on the Supreme Court, there should be, by all rights, a Republican majority. But there isn't. And there's a reason for that, because there should not be an ideological litmus test that is put on judges through this process. I'm not so interested in impeaching judges because I disagree with their decisions. What I am interested in is ensuring that judges are on the bench in the first place who will follow the Constitution, who will apply the law as they find it, not as they wish it would be. And there's a difference there. It's a subtle difference, but it's a difference. I may not agree with what the 11th Circuit did in the Terry Schiavo case, but look at who just was put on that 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, Bill Pryor, who everybody said was, you know, some right-wing ideologue. And yet he applied the Constitution as he saw fit. Now, a lot of my brethren on the right don't agree. But my purpose, my entire purpose with this coalition is to make sure that the law is applied as the Constitution is written. Not to necessarily go out and impeach judges simply because I disagree with the decisions. If, however, there is, if they go over the edge and start emanating in those penumbras, or if there is some moral turpitude question, or, you know, any of those kinds of things, then absolutely impeach those judges. And it has been done, but it should be a process with a very high standard.
Judge Gertner, isn't that one of the problems here, that, you know, you've got judges trying to apply concepts from a document which was written hundreds of years ago, which applied to a world which has clearly changed in almost every possible way since then?
The Constitution is a general document. The Constitution is not a code. It doesn't tell us what we have to do tomorrow. It is something that's subject to interpretation, and now 200 years of precedent. And the interpretations vary and have varied from the beginning of time and from the beginning of the document. And what you're talking about is fair differences on that interpretation. But the issue, the notion that the judge that interprets it in a way that's inconsistent with what Ms. Daly believes or what Mr. Scarborough believes should be impeached, the notion that one can even enter into the enterprise based on a disagreement with a decision, it seems to me, is exactly the wrong thing. The disagreement with a decision is affecting directly the outcome and is very much like, as I said, the judges I talked to in Eastern Europe who would be told what the outcome was supposed to be, what the line was. And that's not our country.
Let's go back to our phone lines one more time to Southborough, Massachusetts, to Alex. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I'm extremely concerned. I'm a congregational minister, and I'm extremely concerned about the discussion connected with Christianity, Ms. Daly. You sound as if you are acting as if Christians are somehow persecuted in this situation. As a Christian, I'm embarrassed by that presumption, and I feel especially connected to it as you make something sound trivial, like Christmas being changed into winter holiday. As a person who ministers to primarily student kids and adolescents, I'd like to say that the message is much clearer in kids' minds. We do not want, as a nation, to be focusing on Christmas and Easter. We are not a nation of only Christians. And when we perpetuate, and when people like you perpetuate the notion that we are a nation that is powered and empowered by only one religion, you are confusing the youth of our country, and you will lose many, many followers that you think you are gaining.
Alex, thanks for the call. Kay Daly, clearly, I imagine you want to respond.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I don't. There's nothing in anything that I believe I've said so far that says that I want this to be a Christian nation, period. That's not it at all. What I want to make sure of, though, is that Christianity is not excluded. That it is not a religion that is the one that you cannot discuss.
But isn't that the message if you call it Christmas break, for example, just to go back to what we were saying, as opposed to winter break?
Why not?
Winter break embraces everybody. Christmas clearly is a Christian holiday.
But why can't you? I mean, the fact, look at David Limbaugh's book, Persecution, sometime. It's a fascinating detailing of exactly how Christianity in particular has been persecuted throughout jurisprudence in this country. And it's gradual. It is happening. It is out there. I don't understand why my child has to be literally... have the Bible taken out of his hands, but he must have access to every form of pornography that's out there. Why cannot we talk about God and Christianity openly in public? What is the problem with that?
Kay, let me stop you there. We've just got a little bit of time left, Nancy, and I want to ask you just how you see this playing itself out.
It's hard to know. I mean, it's hard to know. It seems to me that we have to put some facts on the table. What you're talking about is how to make the schools accessible and amenable and open to all religions so that the school doesn't put a label which, in fact, favors one or the other. In fact, when the notion that there's anyone could have any problem with winter vacation, which then it makes you amenable to practice whatever you want, and that is anything more than the school attempting to be neutral. It may be imperfectly neutral, but that's what it's trying to do. And I don't see how anyone can criticize that. How it plays out, I don't know.
Well, to be continued.
Right.
I want to say thanks so much to the Honorable Nancy Gertner, federal judge from the District of Massachusetts. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And to Kay Daly, president of the Coalition for a Fair Judiciary. Kay, thanks.
Thank you.
The Connection is produced by Sarah Baker, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Finalosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugarts, with help from Annie Hopengarten and Patrick Kiker. Our website is theconnection.org. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection.